Rolling.
Welcome to the Inner Fight Endurance podcast. Rob Jones, fresh from your track session this morning.
Yeah, I've got one of those, you know, one of those coughs after you've worked out too hard. You have a little...
yeah, I don't get many of those these days. You rocked up, you were about 3 minutes late. Yeah, jumped onto the back of the bus and we're like, what are we doing? And me and Skinny said, you will not find out. What did you think we were doing?
I had no idea. You said something similar to last week. And I thought about it for the first 50 meters. Did I know what you did last week? Not really. And then Skinny told me between the 50 and the 100, or between the 50 and the 150, roughly what the plan was. Didn't tell me the rest. Just told me the distances.
3x1500 with 100 float into 6x400 with 60 seconds rest.
Yep.
Back to 2x1500.
Yeah, I didn't get the second 1500 on there. I missed that one.
You're running it at hard pace for the 1500s and even harder for the 400s.
And then even harder again for the final 15.
12.
Hang on for dear life. It's a good session.
Hoka Rocket X's were on. Rocket X2s.
Excellent shoe.
I absolutely love them. They make you really want to run.
No.
Run fast with good form.
Still, they're... Yeah, I wouldn't wear them for much longer than that. My calves felt smoked by the end of that session.
Yeah, well, speed kills. Also, happy to say, Precision Fueling and Hydration are back on the bus.
Are they?
Now, we used to give out a code. No longer do we do codes.
We don't do codes.
Because of AI, code bots. They just ruin everything for everyone. So now you've got to go to the podcast description.
Right.
There is a link in there. Click on the link, head through, you get a discount, you get hydration and fueling products.
Excellent. So everyone's fueling, and I know people are looking for fueling and hydration needs. I was speaking to people on Friday who are about to put an order in of Precision Fuel and Hydration. Maybe I'll tell them to do exactly that.
Is coming.
So that's actually one of your clients that was asking.
Today we have a guest who has been on the show before and is coming back on. And it's a good show. This show is actually the first one of a four-part series that we are calling The Path. And the show came around when, Dr. Tom Wright, he actually has two last names, which is a story for another time. But he is very active on LinkedIn and he wrote a post around, the first question was, what are you in a rush for? And it caught my attention and we started having a conversation. And I was like, mate, come back on the show. And then we talked a little bit more about it and we were like, you know when you're excited to read a new book that you think can help you out in life and
yeah.
You get through the first chapter and you're like, yes, I'm going to do all of that. And then you get to chapter two and then you forget what you were doing in chapter one. And by the end of the book, you actually sometimes don't even finish the book because you're like, you actually need time to bed in whatever this book is teaching you. And so we were like, we could do a whole show on this, but actually why don't we break it down into four parts and then help people move themselves through the journey that he's talking about, which is discovering where you're actually going and why you're doing it, particularly within the endurance space. Because how often do people finish an event and then they immediately think, what's next?
Yeah, or definitely.
It's the most common asked question, right? What have you got next then?
Nobody takes time in between to think about it, process it, figure out what they actually want.
What they actually want and why they're in such a rush, you know, to get there. So, Tom's a family physician. Physician? How do you say
physician.
That? Physician. Physician. The tough one, huh? I think I say it wrong in the main show as well, which means he's a GP. Used to be in the UK, now lives in Canada. But he's now realised that sort of usual medical practice isn't really what's going to help people. So he's upskilling himself. I would call it upskilling. But he's retraining himself as a life/personal coach, which he does alongside his physicianing.
General practitioning.
So it's a really interesting conversation. Tom's a really good guy, known him for a long time and very excited to bring more of him to your guys' ears. But before we get there, the first T100 race was last weekend in Miami on the Speedway. Did you watch it, Rob?
I didn't watch the whole thing. I saw highlights. I watched highlights.
I think now, knowing it's coming here in November.
Are you more excited?
I'm definitely more invested in it.
Okay.
Yeah. There was a nice, quite good bit of build up. A couple of athletes pulled out sick in the race week. It's quite early season for triathlon, so maybe they pushed a little bit too hard too soon. And we had a real surprise winner in the women's. Not too much of a surprise in the men's. Magnus Ditlev, he came out of the swim a couple of minutes down. Then he rode himself up to the front pack, I think. And then he came off into the run in the front pack, just bided his time and just did what he usually does. Gently just runs his way to the front and won. Alistair Brownlee, absolute legend of the sport. He was in the lead for most of the bike. And then
start of the run, right?
Start of the run. And he was running like ridiculous splits at the start and did his usual, blew himself up completely, which is a shame to watch. If he could just measure that effort at the start a bit more, he would win these. But he's Ali Brownlee for a reason.
Knowing everything he knows, why do you still think he does it?
He just absolutely just loves murdering himself, I think.
You reckon one day he thinks it's going to work and I'm going to be able to hold this?
I reckon that's how they think, yeah. I reckon. You got 2 Olympic goals. Who cares? Just run your ass off. Enjoy it. On the women's side, Lucy Charles-Bartley led the race for most of it, which she's very used to doing. She's the current Ironman world champion and she's racing short distance this year just because she enjoys doing something different, which I think is pretty cool. But India Lee, who not many people, maybe people don't know, she's a British athlete, has been around for a long time and just had the run of her life. One of the fastest run splits on the day, or I think the fastest bike and run split of the day, which shows that that's what this sort of distance is down to. It's about being able to ride really hard and run really hard off it. She was a minute slower on the swim than Lucy, who was first out of the water, but then 1:53.08 on the bike and a 1:06.05 on the run. Just really, really consistent and fast splits. She just got herself there and you could tell, was it a surprise to her? Maybe she knew she had this performance in her, but it was definitely such an overwhelming experience for her. If you haven't seen it, go and watch the highlights. It just shows you what sport and winning can mean to professional athletes and everybody. There's no one out there who was not happy that she won. Mm. It was such a nice thing to watch. Quite unknown. Like, if you look at her tri suit, she's got like one sponsor. Yeah. but she's, incredible, incredible win and an extremely nice person. So it was good to see that. And it's nice to see as well. So the top three were all Brits. Holly Lawrence, who was world champ back in, I think, like 2016, 17, had a really good race. She looks like she's coming back into her form of her lifetime. She was third, Lucy Charles-Bartley second, India Lee first. And now this is it. It's up and running.
Started.
So we've got 7 more races, including the grand final. And we're now, the T100 is underway. It's really fun to watch.
So next up, they have on the 13th, 14th of April, they head over to Singapore for their Asia's iconic city circuit in the waters of Marina Bay. And then after that, they're off to Alcatraz in June.
Yeah, so the word on the street is not too many are going to travel to Singapore for the time zone. And
it's quite close, isn't it? It's only
And it's a humid race. So quite a lot, I think, are hanging around for the California race, then London, then Ibiza, then back to the States for Las Vegas, then over here to Dubai, and then the undisclosed grand final location. But they've got to do, out of the 7 races, plus the grand final, they need to do 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'd like to skip 2 of the, if you like, the league events.
Yeah.
Everyone exactly. attends the grand final. How will the grand final work? So is it a point system?
Top 20 athletes will make it to the grand final.
Okay.
Yeah. It's going to be good. Mate, you're Cat Springing this weekend.
This weekend we head to Cat Springs, a little mountain, a 500 meter ascent Mountain in Ras Al Khaimah, and the guys will be going for 24 hours. We've got people running all sorts of trail races in the summer, so it's a great mountain. It's enclosed, it's safe-ish, that we can monitor people's efforts and they can get round back to aid stations. It's got a bit of everything, so it's a very good training ground. Some people will be going for 3 loops, 5 loops, 7 loops, time-based. There's lots of stuff going on.
Awesome.
Fill you in on the highlights next week.
Yes. Good. Right, guys, grab a notebook and pen, potentially, if you want to make your life possibly better. Easy. If not, just listen away and listen in. But yeah, notebook and pen for this one. There'll be three more in this series coming up. We'll launch them each quarter, I think, is the smart way of doing it. So Tom is going to ask you some questions. You guys get to write them down and we will follow them on episode. Very excited to bring you this style of podcast. Have fun. Let us know how you get on. Here we go.
Dr. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you, Tom. Good to see you again.
Yes. Now, listeners, long-time listeners of the show will know that you were on episode 129 with the impressive title of How to Live a More Simple and Effective Life.
Wow. And yeah. if they don't remember that it was episode 129 specifically, then what the hell are they doing?
What are they doing? Mate, we go back a while. We're mates from back in our party days.
Mm-hmm.
Just disclosure to our listeners, but you've nearly always have been since I've known you, but a family physician doctor, currently living in Canada, but you're also turning yourself into a very thought-provoking and I would call leader in the personal and team coaching space. You've also called yourself a well-being advocate and adventurer, which I can half and half agree with, but I can definitely say you are a very good doctor and definitely a good personal and team coach.
Oh, I appreciate that a lot. I really thank you. Thank you for your kind words. And I guess like we're all on a journey, right? We're all transforming. You're never static. You're never stuck in one moment in time. And what we call ourselves and what we do is in constant evolution. And if you told me 20 years ago that I'd be doing this, I probably wouldn't have predicted that.
Yeah. And we actually talked a little bit about a few weeks ago, didn't we, to catch up for this. And we said about, we were just catching up as friends, really. And there's a few bits that you've definitely let go of in your past and mainly around, actually, we're talking about drinking, weren't we? We're talking about zero alcohol beverages and stuff. And you were like, actually, I really don't drink anymore. And it's funny because we met mainly through just drinking too much in pubs and clubs. And now you're doing what you're doing. But I think that's part of what makes you very good at what you do, because you understand both sides of the coin. You understand the person who might have fallen into more unhealthy habits or likes having a party but wants to try and change, and you've gone through that and you're still very much the same person. You know, you've not lost your identity or who I know you as Tom Wright, and actually you're better for it.
Yeah, I really appreciate you saying that. And one of the things I think you are very good at this as well is having compassion for others and having compassion for yourself is really important on that journey. You know, it'd be very easy to talk about myself and say, oh, you know, what a terrible person I was because I did this, this, or this, and I used to drink, but I don't do that. And I'm not going to do that. And I think that sometimes that can be quite a bold move because people expect you to perhaps talk, shamefully about yourself. But that was a different part of me. And yeah, I do still occasionally drink from time to time, but significantly less because it doesn't serve me and it doesn't serve the things that I want to do these days. And you know, that's the impression I get from you and the conversations that we've had. So all of that to say, I think compassion is a really important ally on our journeys.
Mm. Yeah, and there's no doubt you would still go near a karaoke mic, whether you had a few beers or not.
Exactly, I wouldn't even need the beers. I wouldn't deprive the world of my beautiful singing voice.
So, mate, the way this started actually was, you know, we're quite active on LinkedIn, and one of the posts you put up around a month or so ago was, and the start of the post was simply, where are you in such a rush to get to? And this immediately sparked a load of thoughts in my brain, and I was like, man, that's such a good post. And you go into a few other points, which we're actually going to go into more in this show and some up and coming shows. But something we see in the endurance world, and you've actually, I know you've entered a marathon now, so you're going to see more of it, but people are going somewhere in a rush. They're entering race after race after race. And maybe at the start, it's all for very healthy habits. It's to get them out of some unhealthy habits, and entering an endurance sport race, whether it's a marathon, triathlon, Ironman to be extreme, they help sort of turn the tide in your favor of towards health. But there's a certain point where you go almost too far with it, and it can lead to back into unhealthy habits, obsessions, body image, eating, eating disorders, training disorders, I think I would call it as well, where you're constantly, is 10 hours enough? No, 11 hours needs to be enough. 12 hours needs to be enough. And this sparked off a great conversation between us that we're actually going to split into four shows throughout the year. We're not going to do them back to back because we want people to be thinking about what the topic you're going to go through today. And we're going to give you guys, the listeners, a little bit of homework to go away with or some thoughts to think about. But let's start with what the first sentence of your post was, mate, which is, where are you in such a rush to get to? Let's go from there. What are you talking about when you wrote that post?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think that it came from this this feeling that I was experiencing that we don't exist in isolation. That famous John Donne quote, no man or person is an island unto themselves. That, you can't help but experience the urgency in our culture and society at all times. And maybe that's what I was feeling when I wrote that first sentence, where are you in such a rush to get to? And it just made me curious, how have we got to this point? How have we got to this point as a culture where being quick, being fast, being urgent, rushing, and perhaps not thinking or reflecting on what's important to you has become the priority, has become the way that we do things? So I think that's kind of what that sentence was around.
And from there, you're kind of talking about what you said already, urgency culture, and where we've got to in this day and age of what we're seeing. But in your unique position as a personal coach, a team coach, but also a doctor, how is it affecting our lives?
That's a really great question, Tom. And I think that, the way that I would look at it is, how do we speak to ourselves, knowing that we have this urgency culture? What are the things that we say to ourselves? Maybe it's around deadlines. Maybe it's around, maybe it's around shame and guilt if I don't manage to do something. How do we talk to other people? What are our expectations of our partners, of our colleagues, of family members? And what do we do? What are the actions that we end up taking because of this sense of urgency? And what do other people see us doing? They don't see us, being intentional and mindful and calm. They see us rushing around hurriedly and feeling stressed. And that energy is infectious. And, ultimately, how do we end up feeling? So I think those are the things that, it leads to. Those are some of the consequences that can come about from this urgency culture.
And I mean, stress is stress on the body, right? I mean, that's kind of well known now, is like stress through work, stress through maybe relationships, stress through exercise. Is the body treats it as stress. There's no, oh, it's exercise stress, therefore it's okay. It's like more stress from exercise on top of already what we'd call life stresses is not good for us.
Absolutely not. I mean, there's tons of research to support this, that, you know, stress in the short term, you know, can be motivating. We know that when we have a deadline, you know, it might lead to a change in the way that we approach the task. But stress chronically, and by that I mean over a long period of time, feeling stressed over weeks, months, years, our entire lifespan, has a significantly detrimental effect on our physical, mental, emotional, spiritual well-being. So, you know, we know that feeling stressed leads to higher levels of cortisol. If we're in that stress state as well, you know, from a physiological perspective, we might be in the sympathetic state. The sympathetic nervous system is part of our autonomic nervous system. And, you know, people have traditionally referred to that as the fight or flight part of the nervous system. So essentially our body's ramping up to either approach something that we perceive to be dangerous or run away from it or flee. And constantly being in that nervous state is detrimental to our well-being. So yeah, we know that, you know, constantly feeling stressed, constantly feeling like everything is a priority, everything is urgent, is not good for our health.
And it's, when you're in it, it's hard to see it, right? We kind of think, maybe some people are thinking, okay, but everything is a priority. I need everything now. You know, we can order food to our doors quicker than ever. We can speak to whoever we want, whenever we want, you know, people. And I have conversations with people who are like, yeah, my boss emails me at 2 a.m. And I'm like, okay, but you're still reading it at 2 a.m. Like they're emailing it at 2 a.m., which is one part of the problem. And you're reading it at 2 a.m., which is another part of the problem. But it's kind of how life, and as you've already said, how life has just, that's how it is now. But if we're sat in it for a long period of time, we almost become immune to it, right? We're like, it's the new norm. But what are some ways that you see, and some ways that you give to people to actually become aware of them living in an urgency culture? How do you define it, that someone is in it or not?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I think that the word that you just used is probably one of the biggest things, I would say, awareness. Awareness leads to change. So sometimes we feel like we need to do tons of things, like we need to move mountains in order for there to be a significant change in our lives. And it doesn't have to be that big. Baby steps are really important here. So it might just be taking 5 minutes in your day. It might even be listening to this podcast and going away and writing down some ways that you recognize for yourself where you're feeling rushed, where you're feeling like you're not prioritizing your own needs and wants, and someone else's sense of urgency is impacting you, and asking yourself the question, are these my priorities or are these someone else's? And considering the impact that rushing around and doing everything at 100 miles per hour is having on you. So I think those are probably some of the things that I would start with. And often it's really tempting when we want to change something to do lots of things, but maybe to start with that awareness piece is what I would suggest.
You think in a more of a sport context, obviously being an endurance podcast, it may be in a running context or any context, but it's when you're maybe entering races or events because other people are, and mm-hmm. you feel like maybe you don't actually want to do it, but because other people are doing it, you're going to do it as well. And then you feel like if so-and-so is running for 21K on Sunday, you also need to run 21. But is that actually what your plan is to do? Is it situations like that you would say is a good thing for people to actually stop and write down and ask themselves, why do I need to do this race, or why do I need to run this amount of time or ride this amount of time, or, you know, compare themselves to other people?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, Tom, and that's a really, you know, really interesting question. And I think kind of what comes up when you say that is, yeah, that's so being aware of comparison, like when we are maybe if we're comparing ourselves to other people, like for instance, you talked about running, and recognizing that that's coming up for us and how it's making us feel. Oh, I noticed that, you know, you've run 40K this weekend and I've only done 20, because that was all I felt like I could do. Because when I woke up on Saturday morning, you know, in terms of my time and the energy that I had and how I was feeling when I ran, that's all I could do. So maybe developing some awareness around when we're comparing ourselves to other people. And another thing that we were talking about at the beginning of this podcast is compassion. Compassion for others, but also really importantly, self-compassion. You know, I'm doing my best, changing that narrative, changing those beliefs. I'm doing my best with the time, energy, and effort that I have today. When I woke up, this is what I had in the tank. And the fact that I got out there and the fact that I went for a 20K run is really good. So really kind of changing that narrative.
Yeah. Could you explain a bit more around compassion and certainly self-compassion? Like when are people seen to be most in a most self-compassionate state? Is this something you can just switch on and off, or do you have to be sort of like self-aware of it, whether you are being compassionate to yourself or not?
Yeah, really good questions. And I think that, it probably comes back to culturally learned beliefs again, that we've learned not to be self-compassionate because there's this perception that it's weak, and that if we're kind to ourselves, we couldn't possibly be kind to ourselves, because that would mean we're letting ourselves off the hook and then we wouldn't get anything done. So that's the underlying fear that drives us. And actually, there's some amazing research into self-compassion. Kristen Neff is probably one of the biggest names in the world in self-compassion. Highly recommend reading her literature. But she talks about the fact that actually being self-compassionate does not lead to those outcomes. It actually makes us more creative. It makes us more resilient. People who are self-compassionate tend to do more. You know, when we tell ourselves that actually being kind to ourselves will mean that we won't do these things, actually, no, the evidence points in the other direction. And just as it is a culturally learned belief that we shouldn't be self-compassionate, you can unpick that, you can change that belief, but it takes time. So at first, when you're being kind to yourself, it might feel a little bit like, this doesn't sit good with me. You know, I'm not used to this. That's okay. But baby steps, you know, it might start with trying to be a little bit more intentional and trying to be a little bit more aware with the language that we use towards ourselves. And bit by bit by bit, like training a muscle, you will find that it's easier to do.
It's quite, when you say be kind to yourself, I maybe rightly or wrongly, I jump into other people's shoes of how that looks. And like you said, some people might think it's weak, but others might also think it means what you said, letting themselves off the hook and saying, okay, I've entered a marathon in 12 weeks time. I'm going to give myself self-compassion and sleep in today, or, you know, eat some bad food that they think is being kind to themselves because it makes them feel good. So do you ever look at it from a, like, what is kindness, I guess?
Yeah, that's a really important question to ask yourself. So let's go with your anecdote. And as you said, I'm training for my first marathon at the end of May. Personally, by being kind to myself, I know what the goal is that I have to achieve, and I know what the sub goals are that I know that I have to run this weekend, and I know how much I'm going to do. But if I wake up tomorrow and I feel like a bag of shit, that self-compassionate part would kick in, and I would probably ask myself a subsequent set of questions about, okay, I wanted to do this. How realistic is that based on how I'm feeling right now in the moment? What could I do instead? I think that's all or nothing thinking, what you were highlighting earlier when you said, like, the assumption that if we're kind to ourselves, we're just going to throw everything out the window and be like, I'm just going to sit on the couch and just smash a bag of chips. And I don't think realistically that's what happens to us. I actually think that by cultivating this attitude, we realize that maybe we don't go to the other end of the extreme. And we're talking about urgency culture, and we're talking about just, you know, hitting the accelerator. Maybe we don't go 100 miles per hour, even when we're feeling tired, because we do that as well, don't we? If I woke up tomorrow and I felt like a bag of shit, but I did 13 miles and then I ended up feeling like garbage for 2 weeks because I became really sick, well, that's not good either. So I think it's about having this middle ground and trying to find something that fuels you, that supports you, that nourishes you, a belief that kind of helps you. It's kind of like having a supportive parent part of you that's in your corner, that's backing you.
It's funny you say all or nothing type of people, because there a lot of our listeners will be all or nothing type of people, because that's the kind of people who end up running marathons, entering Ironmans. And I hear it a lot, you know, I need an event, otherwise I won't train. And I always think, that's such a shame, you know, because that means that you're doing something then purely because you want to do the event, not because you actually enjoy waking up and doing exercise. And that's where I see a lot of the time people doing endurance exercise almost as a punishment. And then they're not kind to themselves while doing it, because they're almost in a weird way punishing themselves to do this event. And then if they're not doing an event, they're still not kind to themselves, because they're telling themselves that they're, you know, they're weak, or they're not, you know, they're not good enough to be training because they're not doing an event. So what's the point? And I think that also adds into the urgency culture around, certainly around endurance sport, which is like, and the most common question people are asked once they finished a race is, what are you doing next? And it just drives that sense of like, I need something next to work towards. Whereas what you're coming from, which I think is such a good way, is like, just ask yourself, why are you doing it? And showing yourself some compassion around, is this going to be what I actually want to be doing? And it's okay if it's not, if people in my circle don't like that, or when they ask me what's next and I say, I'm not sure yet, how do they react around me? And is that, are people reacting around you in a positive way, or do people act around you in a weird way of saying like, oh, well, you better find something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really insightful. And, you know, it makes me think that we are a very, very goal-driven culture, and the impact that being purely goal-driven has on us and our well-being, and how we tie that to our ego and our self-worth. And if we don't achieve the goal set out to do, what is that? And then the questions we start asking ourselves, what does that mean for me? Oh, I'm a failure because I couldn't do that. And yeah, I've had so many conversations with people around this. People say, well, no, if I didn't have a goal, I'd never get anything done. Is that really true? And what I personally try to do, and another way to look at things, is being values driven. So for instance, like, you know, you love exercise and it's like such an important part of your life. And thinking about the values that drive that for you, like wanting to be healthy, being healthy is a huge part of your life. That's a value that drives the goals that you end up pursuing. So thinking about the person that we want to be, rather than attaching ourselves to a specific outcome or goal in the future, those goals are driven by our values, but actually thinking a little bit more about the kind of person that would achieve that goal and the person that we need to be in order to achieve that goal. And then we will focus on the here and now and the process.
So we're coming along a little bit towards identity, self-identity, and particularly in this case, performance identity, where our identity is based on how we're performing compared to other people.
Yeah.
Does performance identity coincide with people's obsession with perfection, do you think?
I think that, yeah, perfectionism is certainly linked to performance identity. And it's a really... And it probably relates to what we've been talking about with this sense of urgency. And perfectionism is a pervasive belief that exists, I think, in all levels of our culture. And what impact does trying to be perfect all the time, trying to be perfect with your training, trying to be perfect with the results that you get, maybe you run an endurance event, and always trying to beat your last time, which is admirable. But then if you don't, or you can't for whatever reason, not recognizing the effort that it took to get to that point, not recognizing the hours of training that you put in, the times when you showed up, when you felt tired, but only looking at that specific tiny little thing, that's the risk of being overly perfectionistic. And again, like, I'm harping on about this, but that's where self-compassion can come in. Because if you were self-compassionate, you would look back at your training, you would look back at your progress, and you look at things in a completely different way.
Love that. Yeah, absolutely love that. And I think we kind of do that in endurance coaching in terms of trying to breed this more value culture around how we're getting to the event. So keeping a training journal, commenting on sessions around what was going on before, how are you thinking during, how are you thinking after. And sometimes we'll have an athlete who, let's say they have a 4-hour ride, right? And let's say before they're in a good place, but then they get to their bike and they've got a puncture, right? And they have to fix the puncture. Then they have to, like, that takes time, and then something else goes wrong, or maybe they forgot something else and they've gone through like an ordeal that took an hour. So they might say, well, I only rode 3 hours of the four. But because you know the context of what they've gone through before they've started the ride, I'm like, well done. Like, a lot of other people would have just shut their bike back in the car and driven home, or, you know, not even left the front door because a small spanner got stuck in the works, whatever. Whereas you've managed to overcome that. You've
overcome a challenge and then done what you can with your training. Like, brilliant, brilliant job. Whereas if we're in this performance driven side, it's like, well, you didn't do 4 hours, therefore it's a failure of a day. Mm-hmm. I think as coaches, we should be really aware of how we're talking with our athletes and things. And also for athletes, you've got to be really aware to give context around the session. And maybe you had a crazy night, the kids are up, you know, you had to help sort out whatever, one of the kids was sick in the night, you had to help sort them out, you didn't get the right sleep, and therefore you missed your slot to run in the morning, so you could only do half of the duration in the evening. Well, amazing, you know, good job. If we only looked at it from you missed your run and you only did half in the evening, then you've not hit the target. But what you're saying with self-compassion is, hang on, I had to do this, this, and this because my values are towards family, or values are towards hard work, or, you know, even our values here at Inner Fight, smash life attitude, which might mean helping out a friend who's quickly asked you to do something because you want to be there for them. You know, all these other things, being honest with yourself, you're doing those, which are your values. And then the outcome, whatever that is in terms of performance, is the outcome. But you've been who you are going through it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love everything you said, Tom. And I think it kind of, you know, a lot of things come up for me, but awareness is really important, isn't it? Because it's easy to just kind of go drift through things and not really be aware of the bigger picture of our lives. You were talking about people who have families, for instance, you know, and I've had clients who have said things like, "Oh, I just can't understand why I'm so exhausted, and you know why I don't have any energy anymore, and I can't do this, this, and this." And then just for a bit of curiosity, I ask them, "Well, tell me about your day. Like, what do you do?" And they're like, "Well, I wake up at 5 a.m. and then I go to the gym for 2 hours, and you know, then I go to work and I do this and I fit." And I'm like, "What time do you finish?" And, you know, sometimes I finish at 7, and but I work until 10 p.m. I'm thinking, you know, and I reflect that back to them. And I say, "Okay, well, so what I'm hearing you say is that you do this, you do this, do this. As I say that all back to you, what do you think?" And they're like, "Oh my God, wow, I do a lot, don't I?" I'm like, "Sounds like it to me." And, you know, maybe they've got a family as well. Like you said, they've got kids. And maybe they're supporting, you know, like a parent or whatever. Like, we have so many other parts to our life. So when we focus purely on this story around the goal and how we're not matching up or we're not meeting our target, actually having a bit more situational awareness and a bit more self-awareness, I really believe that you're more likely to succeed if you have that bigger awareness, that holistic awareness.
Excellent. So Tom, we want to make this a four-part series. We want to help people sort of figure out where they're going and, more importantly, why. So for listeners listening, if you're in a position where you're entering, you're a chronic race enterer, or you're entering things and you're not truly sure why, or maybe you're a little bit more interested in to learn about yourself and understand what you're entering or what you're setting down as goals, but more importantly, if you're feeling rushed to achieve things, then this really is who we're talking to. And as you said, mate, at the start, there's a lot of signs to that, all built around stress, not having time in the day, you know, maybe doing things, walking, you know, the common one is walking into a room and forgetting why you've walked in, picking up your phone and forgetting why you've picked it up, or getting distracted a lot, not having time for people, you know, a lot of unfortunately really normal things in people's lives in the here and now. So a couple of tasks, mate, and you mentioned one already, but just to get you to reiterate them, because we're going to go through sort of the next step in the next episode, but until from now until then, what would you suggest people do in order to become more self-aware and more self-compassionate with themselves?
Yeah, so maybe a couple of things. And as I was saying earlier, I think awareness is a big part of change. That's step number one. So it doesn't, right now, it doesn't have to be about, you know, doing loads of things, taking loads of actions, but maybe the thing that you do is develop some self-awareness. So you might do this by journaling, you might grab some paper, you might write this down on a computer, whatever works for you, or you might just intentionally carve out 5 minutes in your day. But have a think about perhaps what a typical day looks like for you. And if there isn't such a thing in your life right now, what did yesterday look like? Mm-hmm. And maybe write down all of the things that you did from the moment that you woke up to the moment that you went to bed. And look at how they make you feel. So you might write next to some of them that they made you feel energized and nourished. And you might write next to others that they made you feel depleted or stressed. And some of them might not have had much of an impact, and you might write neutral. But it's just a good thing to do to develop a bit of awareness around what your life currently looks like right now. And also, I would ask you these questions. What are you prioritizing right now? You know, whether that's work, you know, family, whatever, what are your priorities right now? And also, whose priorities are they? You talked about people answering emails at 2 o'clock in the morning. Whose priority is that? Is that yours or is that your boss's? And the final question, where are you rushing? I think I'll leave it at that.
That's the hard one. I like that. Do you is that something you do every day, mate? Do you journal? Do you write down how your day's been and things? Or do you do it in the morning or both?
Good question. I write a lot all the time. I think that I'm just constantly writing my thoughts down. That to be honest with you, that's something that I naturally do that I like doing for others. That might be, I've spoken to clients before and they're like, ah, journaling doesn't work for me. You know, that's fine. Don't do something that doesn't feel good, that doesn't feel right. There's another way that you can develop self-awareness. It might be that, you know, you going out for a run and just having space to think really is how you get that awareness, whatever it is for you. But yeah, to answer your question personally, that is something that I do, I find really helpful.
So it doesn't need to be writing. You can go talk to someone else, talk to a friend about it. Maybe just go in with those questions of, can I tell you my day from start to finish and how the certain tasks made me feel? And I would like to, you know, can I have a chat with you about where I'm rushing to or what I feel I'm in a rush to do? And yeah, otherwise it's a bit of paper and a pen. It's really quite easy to do. And I think journaling is something I didn't used to think a lot about or try, but I actually started doing a task which I started last year, January the 1st 2023. I began this sort of I think it was 3 or 4 month task, and it involved writing every single day, and it created a habit in me that I then just continued on with, answering pretty much those questions that you've talked about, mate. So maybe you think journaling isn't for you. Maybe you already do it and you know the power that it can have. But as with anything, a habit takes time to create. And once you are underway in doing it and you set things up in order for yourself to win, if you like, or remove the friction towards that habit, I think writing down your thoughts is extremely powerful, purely for yourself to read back.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. And also, something I say to myself and all my clients and friends and family and anyone who will bother to listen to me, which is not that many, just do a minute. It doesn't have to be, It doesn't have to be an hour. Just spend 60 seconds writing down, today was hard. Full stop. It doesn't matter.
yeah, that's it. Good. Yeah. Okay, mate. So we're gonna leave people there. There's your task, guys. You've got about, well, we'll give you maybe, we'll see how our scheduling goes, but we want to do one episode a quarter on this. So at least a couple of months for you to get through this and start figuring things out. And the next one will come out. And in the next episode, we're going to talk about, we've become aware, but now how do we actually start making a couple of changes that can get us to be slowing down and putting some of our awareness into actions and helping ourselves control what's going on around us, which is a really interesting topic to me. And I know that's a really interesting one to you as well, mate. So I'm looking forward to that episode. And yeah, thank you so much for coming on. Of course, I'm going to give you some plugging. You have a great website, which is tomcarenzacoaching.ca. And you're also on LinkedIn, and you're pretty active on LinkedIn, and you're a good person to follow, mate, especially for some thought-provoking stuff. And you can go on LinkedIn and search Tom Wright, and you will find him on there. When are you condensing all names into one, mate? Confusing people here.
I know, that's a good one. Maybe another time I'll explain why I've got two names. hopefully soon, in the next couple of years.
Yeah, good man. Well, mate, thank you. I know it's early over there in Canada, and you've actually had an urgent start to the day, which you told me about, which maybe is a sign for people that not everybody is perfect.
No. We're not trying to be perfect. We're just trying to be human. That's it.
Mate, thank you so much. And hopefully, guys, you've got something to take away. And buy a notebook, buy a pen. If you're already doing it, then continue to do so. Hopefully, through this series of podcasts, we are going to bring you a place understanding where you're going, but more importantly, why you're going there.